We move into the second half of Darren Donick and Chase here from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Doubleheader, opening day of the preseason for the Nashville Predators. We've got 3:30 and 7 o'clock. We will have all of the play-by-play here with you. Pete Weber, Hal Gill will have periods 1 and 3 in both games. Chris Mason and I will have the second period of each game, so we'll get a little work in, and so nobody gets overly taxed. Hey, it's preseason. You know, we got to get the work in. Got to sharpen up. The rosters are out there for both. A little bit later in the show, we'll go over them and tell you who's in which game. And with that in mind, too, if you're coming over here, if it's lunchtime. You're thinking lunch? Yes. Come by Pete and Terry's Tavern. And we've got a great lunch special for you. For $12.50, we'll give you a beer and a cheeseburger. Ooh. Jump all over that.
I like that. That is a great deal right there, and because you know I'm getting hungry too.
Yeah,
so after the show, we might have to do that.
Yeah, take a look at that. Might have to take a look at that. All right, it's time to go over to Knoxville. Vince Ferrara is with us, and of course, if you're wondering where Darren is, he's injured, but we feel like he will be ready to go for the broadcast at 3 o'clock. Our pregame starts at 3:00. For the first of the two games, and we expect Darren to be there. We haven't heard otherwise.
He couldn't do a triple header. He might can do a double header.
But there's injury issues that Darren is going to have to fight through here. Vince, what's going on?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing well.
Doing well. So Tennessee gets their first win of the year, as expected, against Tennessee Chattanooga. So what did you take away from it? It's not a surprise that they won, but what did you learn?
Well, even though the competition was an FCS school, they played better and cleaner in a lot of areas. Now, I know normally it'd be, well, it doesn't matter because of the competition, but this team had played down and bad against lesser competition. So it needed this kind of performance. That's one. Didn't guarantee them anything moving forward, but I think it was a must to see that. Had we seen them struggle against that kind of team, then the alarms would have continued to go off at even greater frequency than they had already. So that was the biggest takeaway. Two, got a chance to play a lot of players, and they, again, needed to play a lot of players. It wasn't the constant rotation on the offensive line until the game was pretty well out of hand. So I think that was a benefit for them, to where they still got some continuity and got closer to a first group, even if it's not five. But I think being able to play so many guys on defense and see what they've got, I think that was a big plus. And then the third thing that might be connected to the second one is you got a chance to play your backup quarterback.
Well, let's hit that. Let's emphasize that, Vince, because in the context of what we learned today on the pro side, right, Ben Roethlisberger is out for the season. Drew Brees out for 6 weeks. Felipe Franks, they just announced he will have surgery, and that's, you know, everybody knew that was coming. He's out for 6 months. Gators are now moving on without a quarterback. South Carolina has lost a quarterback for the season. Kentucky has. And so that leads you into exactly what did you learn about the backups to Jared Garantano? Because everybody's got to be thinking, what if we have to play our backup?
Well, but everybody's been thinking even before that, hey, why don't we see another quarterback other than Jared Garantano?
Yeah.
Garantano, excuse me. So that's the biggest thing, is fans have wanted to see one of those other guys. I think what we saw is still to be determined on how good of passers those kids are. They looked inexperienced throwing the football. Brian Maurer can make plays with his legs. Jeremy Pruitt said in the postgame that they went with him second simply because they had some design runs put in that they wanted to see him execute, because he can do that. He has good wheels to where they can do some more things in the run game with him. But neither one of them looked exceptionally sharp throwing the football. I don't think either one of them honestly are ready to take your team to the great heights that fans would expect a magical backup quarterback to. So I think it should have shown that these two guys still need a lot of work, because they're tremendously young, and fixing Jared Garantano is the best route for Tennessee to have success. Not one of those guys, at least at the moment.
So Jeremy Pruitt had a chance to sort of digest this on his own. He had some comments today. What were his highlights of what he takes coming out of a game that we all knew that they were going to win, should win, and going into a critical game this week against Florida?
Yeah, what wasn't committal on in you know, in terms of the quarterback, didn't really talk much in terms of specifics of those guys other than they have a long way to go. He did say that they were better on the offensive line. They had very few mental errors, which I think is progress for them. I like the lineup, though, that they went with last game, in that they moved Kayron Calvert, who came out of the spring at first-team right guard. They started working him last week at right tackle, and then they slid five-star true freshman Darnell Wright, who had been working all camp at right tackle and came in the summer. They slid him down to guard. And it gives them, with Trey Smith on the other side, Wanya Morris, the other five-star tackle, and Brandon Kennedy, the transfer from Alabama that missed most of last year, it gives them, I think, their best chance to have an SEC-caliber offensive line, and they are very big across that line. So him complimenting the O-line and how few mistakes they had, I think is very encouraging. Again, you got to take the opponent into consideration, but it's still progress. Another thing is he talked an awful lot about Florida and the challenge that they bring to the table. That's honestly been different than the first 3 weeks of the season, where Jeremy Pruitt on Mondays, he's talking about all the things about his team, personnel, injuries, guys in and out, rather than the opponent that much, other than his opening comments. But he talked a lot about Florida. That just shows you that this is a different week, and now it matters who you're playing. And he says that Florida isn't any different with Kyle Trask in there, a quarterback, versus Felipe Franks, and was very complimentary of Florida and Dan Mullen, who he's very familiar with across the board. So that was a big chunk of it, was talking about the challenge ahead.
Florida opens up as a 14-point favorite in the Swamp against Tennessee. So how do the fans feel about things after stabilizing, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, you're patching the floodwaters for some, you know, with that UT Chattanooga game. I think it's mixed. I think there's still a big chunk of fans that have already made a permanent determination on Jeremy Pruitt. And there's others that aren't really super optimistic but are going to support their team and not call shows or post on social media and all that kind of stuff. And then there's some that are now sort of defending the program versus their own fans that are trashing the coach and the quarterback and saying they're going to win two games and all that. I think some of those fans that at least saw some encouraging signs Saturday are starting to get a feeling that, hey, maybe this is what we needed, and y'all need to stop trashing our program. It's not helping any of them, all those kind of things. Look, Jerry Garantano in the post game admitted that it's been a rough 2 weeks for him. And he was alluding to all the criticism. He said he wasn't himself, and he played much better on Saturday. So it just shows that that fan reaction will get to those guys. So I think it is all over the place. I'll tell you one little other thing about fan reaction. We post videos, guys, of all the post-game press conferences and all the media avails. Go check out the Jeremy Pruitt post-game from Saturday after a win, and you'll see there's hundreds of comments on there, but a bunch of people criticizing Jeremy Pruitt because he drinks water during his post-game press conference. Like when someone asks a question, he's taking a gulp of water, and all these people are ripping him. The first comment was, you know, there was a lot of ridiculous ones, but this one was, might have taken the cake. Oh, that's not what you get paid for. Go do that on your own time. And just continuously like, oh, how does his wife put up with it? I mean, unreal things. Now that's like the this infatuation, and people are looking for something to complain about over the head coach coming in off a 90-degree weather in a noon kickoff, and he's drinking water to try to hydrate. They have a problem with that. Unbelievable.
Things that you would not hear if they were 3-0, that's for sure. When we come back, right. Chase McCable will be asking some questions of Vince Ferraro. We'll get into Bryce Thompson's situation. How will they handle that? More on the Florida matchup. Of course, the Gators steal one down in Kentucky. Very fortunate to win, but they did pull it out, even though they lost their starting quarterback for the season. Stay tuned. We'll return to Pete and Terry's Tavern. We got hockey today. We got a doubleheader, 3:30 and 7. All the action right here on 102.5 The Game. The pregame will start at 3 o'clock. Stay tuned. We're coming back.
Chattanooga Choo-Choo. Won't you choo-choo me home?
Chattanooga Choo-Choo.
Ah, yes. Chattanooga. Right down the road. Great place. I really enjoy going to Chattanooga.
I like Chatty.
Got some youth like soccer it. And youth baseball that's taken me that way several times. Took the kids there for a weekend. Gets double A team. The aquarium's always a nice thing to go to.
In high school, FRA had a really good girls soccer team. Won the state title several times, and I went down to Chattanooga for the state finals. And then, of course, just went so many times as a kid. The Lookouts, Chattanooga Lookouts.
Yeah.
Some double-A baseball.
I've thrown out the first pitch at the Chattanooga Lookouts.
Did you really?
I did.
Very
Unfortunately,
cool.
The game got rained out 20 minutes in. It was not an official game.
You threw the first and only pitch.
That was the only pitch. I don't think they got started. Remember, the silly underdog picks are back. And, Chase, how'd you do this week?
Man, not good.
Sorry.
We're going to have to reevaluate.
Yes.
Onside kick got you, Chase.
You know what really stinks? And we'll review this Thursday. The game that I was going to take and I changed at the very last minute was Arizona State. And that would have put me right back in it.
Outstanding. So remember to get your picks in by going to thegamenashville.com. Give us the three underdogs you think will win outright. And, of course, we reconvene on Thursday to go through all of the activities from last week and crown the champion that will be heading to the Vanderbilt LSU game on Saturday. Vince Ferraro is with us here. We're talking Vols with him from WNML over in the eastern part of the state.
Yes, and Vinny, I know you're excited about Monday Night Raw at Thompson Bowling Arena tonight. You were texting me this morning after talking to the Good Brothers this morning, so that'll be cool. But back to the Vols, a guy they got back that we keep an eye on here, having gone to Nashville Christian, Daniel Batuli returned for the Tennessee Vols. What were your thoughts on him?
Well, it was, I think, great to get him out there and get him some snaps prior to the Florida game. He is still not 100%, but he looked to be moving pretty well, in on a few tackles. And I thought it was significant to get him out there. As Jeremy Pruitt kind of mentioned today, he said they've invested a lot in Daniel Batuli in the years that he has been at Tennessee, and he helps the other guys out and taking some of the load in terms of making all the calls. He didn't play a ton of snaps, but he was in there early and next to Henry Toto. And I think those are the guys that we anticipated being the starting linebacking group, and they haven't been together very much this season. So in fact, that was the first time we saw them together in a game. So I think that's important to basically get your starting linebackers back. And we'll see what he's like this week, if he's full go or at 100% by Saturday. But it only helps Henry Toto and the freshman, who has probably been their best player in the first three games of the year. And each game he gets more and more active. And they also didn't play him a ton, really. He didn't play much beyond the first quarter, but they didn't need to. He's a starter now. Even though he needs experience, they needed to get a lot of other guys some work and not have him, not risk injury with that guy during that Chattanooga game. So it worked out, I think, best case scenario for those two guys, specifically Batuli.
I know that Bryce Thompson is another player worth watching. He's been practicing. He has not played yet. Has Jeremy Pruitt given any indication of a timetable for return for him?
Well, he was asked about if Bryce Thompson would travel with the team to Gainesville, and Pruitt said he had not decided that yet. That, to me, the way I read into that, I could very well be wrong. I read into that that there's a good chance he will if he's thinking about it. Another interesting development, so we don't know on Thompson yet. If he travels, I think there's a good chance we see him. And then another factor is that Alante Taylor, who was, like Thompson, a guy that had a really good freshman year, a lot of potential, he didn't get the start against Chattanooga. It was Kenneth George Jr., the guy at one of those outside corner starting spots. And Pruitt was asked about that today, and he basically said, well, it's because Kenneth George Jr. had practiced better. And whoever practices better will start. And that's not great. So I think you could be looking at neither one of your two starting corners coming into the year, not even starting in Gainesville, as a possibility. Florida's got some pretty good receivers. So that's another corner story to kind of continue to track. They don't have a ton of depth at those positions. We'll see if we see both or one or neither one of them on Saturday.
I was talking to a Tennessee grad on Saturday. We were watching the game and was with some other college football fans that aren't as familiar with Tennessee from being out of state. And they asked the question of, you know, the biggest rivalry for the Volunteers. To me, it's always been Florida. And the Tennessee grad said, you know, we hate Florida and we've always hated Florida. This is a week that we always get up for. How do you think the Gator fans look at this rivalry? Is it still a rivalry in their mind like it is for Vols fans?
They don't like Tennessee, but it's not their most important game. Everyone that I've talked to from the state of Florida, whether they cover the team or fans that I know of being from Tampa, they look at Tennessee as an annoyance, someone that they don't like, that they want to be, but that's not their priority. Florida looks at things from a national standpoint, and then obviously Georgia is higher up there, and probably LSU, whoever is good that they end up playing against, other than Georgia, who they obviously play every year. I think those are all priorities for Florida fans. Tennessee looks at Florida and Alabama as the top rivals, but I don't think it's viewed as much of a priority the other way. And with the Tennessee fans, you know, Chase, it's the younger generation. Their top rival is Florida. They want to beat the most. And then for the older demographic and the older previous generations, it's Alabama because historically that's the way it was.
Vince, great stuff as always, and we will talk to you again next Monday.
All right, looking forward to it. Quick recovery for Mr. McFarland. You guys have fun on the doubleheader tonight. I appreciate it.
All right, will do. Thanks, Vince. That's Vince Ferrara, WNML. We'll see if Tennessee, win or lose at Florida, can look like they've made a big jump. They're a 14-point dog, Vanderbilt between 19 and 21 underdogs at home against LSU.
I thought I've seen as high as now 24.5.
We'll see. We'll see where it goes from here. But I think the key question for both teams is win or lose the game. They're not expected to win either one of them.
Yeah.
But can you look like you're more in position to win the key games that will come later in the season when they start playing each other in Kentucky and South Carolina? And, of course, Florida's lost their quarterback, but that kid Trask did look pretty good. Interesting game. When we come back, we'll throw the phone lines open. Meanwhile, we're here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Still, we'd love for you to come out and have a bite to eat. If you're looking for a place to grab something before you go into the game, we're here for you.
Get a burger and a beer.
Get the burger and a beer for $12.50. We're throwing that out there for you. But also, we want to get the phone lines going. 737-1025, Titans. And we'll even allow you, if you want to ask a question about the Predators games this afternoon, we'd be glad to answer that as well. But I know a lot of people want to vent. There's a lot that they want to vent about yesterday, about the Titans letting the game slipping away. They left a chance to go 2-0 on the table. 737-1025, give us your outlook. Give us what's on your mind. We got wide open lines. We want to hear from you. 737-1025, give us a call. We're coming back after this.
Brissett takes a knee, and this one will end in Indianapolis's favor. as their mastery over the Tennessee Titans continues. 19-17, the final, as the Colts get their first victory of the season.
Here she comes again.
When she's dancing beneath the stormy sky.
I was listening to a lot of Cars this morning. I bet. Chase, the sad passing of Rick Ocasek.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a bummer.
I've been listening to a lot of Cars, some Eddie Money. It's been rough the last few days. Tell you what,
the Cars and Eddie Money, even if you did not own all the albums, like you could not escape hearing tons of their songs over the years, just one after another over a long period of time. So sad days. I do love the Cars, though, I'll tell you what. All right, you heard the frustration. One of the more frustrating losses, I think, of the last few years for the Titans yesterday. For so many reasons, especially based on the expectation level. And so we want to give you a chance to vent here from Pete and Terry's Tavern. Also, if you want to slide a question in on the Predators, feel free to do that as well. We are counting down towards the opener. Our coverage will start at 3 o'clock. 737-1025 is the phone number. Jump on in there. We want to see where your head is at this point because they play again on Thursday. They got to come right back. But so many things that you had just scratching your head. We listed so many little things where maybe any one or two, if they correct during that game, it might have been enough to win. Starting with the 55-yard run. Better time management on the last drive. Lining up in the neutral zone. Better decisions by the quarterback on key third downs. Missing a field goal. So many little things that added up to lose a game where you walked out of there going, should have had it. Should have had it. 737-1025. Let's get to the phones. I want to get some calls going here. We'll weave in some of our thoughts with it. Brad is on line one. Brad, where's your head?
Hey, guys. Definitely missing Rick Ocasek and Eddie Money today. Usually my childhood. But frustration is a great word for it. I guess Mariota, this is what we're going to do all year. Lose one, win one, 150 yards passing, and we're going to give him a big contract. It's going to be really frustrating. And I will give you an analogy, though. Mark Richt was a great coach at Georgia, and everybody was scared to move away from him because he won 9 or 10 games a year, and everybody was afraid what was next. But they took the leap, and now they've been in the national championship hunt for the last 2 years. We got to move away from this. We got to get somebody. That's a winnable game for a good quarterback, more or less a great quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Roethlisberger, they win that game. They put him in a field goal position, at least to put him in a field goal position. So I'm afraid it's going to be a long year. We're going to be 8-8. 7-9, maybe 6-10. I don't know. But
yeah, I think you've illustrated a really big-time question that is one of the reasons John Robinson has put the roster in this position, not committing to Mariota or to Tannehill beyond this year because it's time to make the call, right? They're going to have to make the call. And your analogy on Georgia I get, but I could also cite some examples that you thought you could do better.
Yeah,
and you didn't. And I would say David Cutcliffe at Ole Miss would be one where they went to Ed Orgeron. So sometimes it doesn't go. You can do better or you can do worse. That's the classic dilemma of having a mid-tier, and as we've defined it through the Athletics analysis. I think we agree with this. He's a tier three quarterback that's got to play closer to tier two to keep his job. And if he stays tier three, you wonder if they can be any better than they've been. They probably can't. Even though the roster, I think, has gotten better.
I said when Mike Vrabel was hired, when John Robinson, you know, told Mularkey, hey, you know what, you went 9-7, you won a playoff game, still not good enough, and they moved on. I said that's when the clock started on John Robinson. I was wrong. I don't think that's when the clock starts because we all forget, some people forget, I should say, John Robinson did not draft Marcus Mariota. That was the previous regime that brought him in. And I feel like he has done everything in his power because the organization loves Marcus and they asked him to make this work with Marcus Mariota. We're two games in and we're still shrugging our shoulders going, I don't know. And it's year five. And that to me is the biggest issue is that, okay, Vrabel had mistakes yesterday. The defense had mistakes yesterday. You had other players on that team that could have been better. But it always circles back to Marcus Mariota and the quarterback of what is, you know, there's a wide open Delanie Walker on the first play of the game. and he's not making that play. He's not making those throws. It's year five. Why are we still asking these questions? So, to your point, the John Robinson, you know, he's not committed to a quarterback beyond this year. I think that's a good thing, because if we're still asking these questions and he doesn't definitively answer them, then John Robinson is going to say, listen, he's going to go to his boss, Adam Strunk, and he's going to say, he's not the guy.
But the difference is, to the caller's Georgia reference, by the way, 737-1025, you can't just go and spend a wad of cash on the best up-and-coming thing. It's a lot harder to find another quarterback, even though I understand that they are at the crossroads and they may decide to do that. They're hoping the picture will become clear, but I think the most likely scenario is you're going to see more games that fluctuate, right? I think Mariota, if his track record is the same, when he's healthy, he's going to have some good games. He's going to have some games where you're like, wow, he may have won us that game. That was a pretty good job. But he's also going to have more games like yesterday, right? And you know, so you're going to end the and then there might be the injuries where he's not at 100%. This is what complicates and makes that picture murky, not only for this year, but for the future.
You know what is a really good analogy in all of this? Because this is going to be a hard decision. Because everyone likes Marcus. I like Marcus. I think Marcus is a great human being. Doesn't make
if
him
he
a
were a jerk, he'd be gone already.
Right. It doesn't make him a great quarterback. They've given him every opportunity. The analogy that I would use is one that's near and dear to your heart. And that is when the Predators and David Poyle made the toughest decision that they have ever had to make. And that was it was time to move on from Barry Trotz. And we all agree, when they did it, it was time. And it turned out to be good for Barry. Barry goes and wins a cup with the Washington Capitals. It turned out to be good for the Preds, because Peter Laviolette has been very successful here, has taken the Preds to the Stanley Cup final. Sometimes you just have to make tough decisions, and you have to make change. And I'm not ready to say that it's going to happen at the end of the year, but through two games, I still have major questions, because even in the win over Cleveland, Marcus looked – he did it. He did enough to win the game.
Yeah, he did.
He took care of the football. He didn't turn it over. He's got four touchdowns on the year. But I still go, huh, I just don't know if he's the guy.
Yeah, I think we knew we were going to have those questions if you were realistic. But he's.
But
got
you also
to...
hoped with the weapons that they were going to answer those questions and they were going to make him look better. Now the common denominator is pointed in one direction.
What really hurt, though, yesterday is not only was he not great, but he left so much on the table, even for the average casual person who's not an expert on what a quarterback should be looking for. I mean, in this day and age where you can stop the TV, freeze it, and see what's there, there's just too many times where you see somebody right there that's a better option of the option that he took, whether it be just tuck the ball down, take a sack when there was a check down there, or missing a guy down the field,
he's
or being
overthrowing.
Off target. There was just too many times that happened yesterday.
I don't understand. And I didn't play football. I don't know the things, but I talk to Derek Mason all the time about this. I don't understand in year five how he is still overthrowing a wide-open receiver. Why is the timing not there? What is it? Is it because he's scared he's going to get his head knocked off because he's had so many injuries in the pocket? Is he scared he's going to get run over, and so he's just forcing it, putting too much behind it? I mean, clearly he's shown us he has the arm,
but
he's just overthrowing these
guys.
I
think sometimes I equate it, just I'm more of a baseball guy or a basketball guy. It's sometimes, no matter how much you work on your shooting from the outside, if you're a three-point shooter, some guys just aren't great shooters. They can get better with practice, but they're never going to be a great, accurate three-point shooter. I think the same can be said of quarterbacks. Same thing with throwing strikes in baseball. Some guys get better, they develop, and they become better strike throwers. Other guys just always seem to struggle with their control a little bit. And now add in to a quarterback all the other things you have to do well to be effective. So this is – it's a classic dilemma here. When we come back, we'll – take more of your phone calls. We'll continue to discuss the Titans. And then at 1 o'clock, we'll set the table for the Predators afternoon. 737-1025 is the phone number. We're at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Come by here and hang with us. Grab something to eat before you go into Game 1, which starts at 3:30. If you want to weigh in, 737-1025. Remember, ESPN 94.9 Game 2. Our sister station is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tomorrow night as Nashville SC takes on Birmingham over at First Tennessee Park. Pregame at 6:45, kickoff at 7 on 94.9 Game 2, powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers. Stay tuned. We're coming back. We continue from Pete and Terry's Tavern here on 102.5 The Game. Big news on the quarterback front. Drew Brees out for 6 weeks. Ben yep. Roethlisberger, elbow surgery out for the season. So the quarterback's going down not just for a few weeks, but for the season on a huge level in the SEC and the NFL.
And we have news. I have made contact with one Darren McFarland. He is at the doctor's office right now awaiting evaluation. He is waiting to be called back. So we have heard from Darren. We hope to have an injury update.
Okay. But either way, he should be good to go for at least part of the broadcast
today?
That's what we hear. Is it up in the air? Do we need to?
That's what we hear.
Is it like the Brent Peterson thing, maybe a scratch?
We don't know. I know that I've been, during the breaks, I've been doing stretches. I've been conserving the voice.
Okay.
I'm ready to go
good.
If need be. So we'll, you know, look, we're a team. When one guy goes down, we pick him up. That's how we work here on Darren Donick and Chase. So we're ready. Pete Weber is here.
He's ready to go.
Yeah.
See, we'll circle the wagons with our people power if need be, if Darren goes down. Next man up. 737-1025 if you want to join us. We've got plenty to talk about. We're letting you vent about the Titans yesterday. Also, if you want to talk Predators as they get ready to open up their preseason with the doubleheader this afternoon, let's go to Clay up first. Clay, welcome to the show. You're on 102.5 The Game.
Willie, how we doing?
All right.
I think it's more than any other time since the Titans have been here, I think this is definitely a day to vent about the Titans. I think it's certainly been heavily discussed today about Marcus Mariota and his ability as a franchise quarterback and the fact that he's probably not going to be the Titans quarterback next year. But I want to touch on some clock management issues, things like that, late in that game yesterday. I thought Mike Vrabel using his last timeout at 2:14 before the two-minute warning was really a bad decision. And I don't know who you put the 3rd-and-2 spike on. Do you put that on Mike Vrabel? Do you put it on Mariota? Do you put it on the offensive coordinator? I think late in that game there was plenty of blame to go around. But ultimately, when push comes to shove, I think the Tennessee Titans lose that football game because the Colts were 50% on 3rd down, and the Titans were 10%. It's that simple.
Clay, I think you laid a lot out there that we've covered throughout the day. But I think, Chase, I found myself looking at a lot of different sections. Like, let's play a little game if I threw this at you. If the Titans just don't give up the 55-yard run to Wilkins, do they win the game?
Yes.
If the Titans manage the clock better in the last 4 minutes plus, do they win the game?
Yes.
If Jarrell Casey doesn't line up in the neutral zone, do they win the game?
Maybe.
I don't know if you say yes, but you say that would have helped. It would have had a lot more time.
I think with the timeouts, I don't blame Vrabel
as much. No,
the whole idea is you want to get a stop before the 2 minute warning, and so you want to give yourself
under
the 2 minutes.
That's conventional. That's an option that you could do or not do.
So burning the timeouts before the 2 minute warning, because they essentially on that drive were able to obviously use all three of their timeouts. They stopped it again at the 2 minute, and then were able to get the stop on 3rd down and force them to punt. So they gave themselves enough time.
Okay.
Well, they didn't manage it with the 30 seconds on the previous possession.
If Cairo Santos, who I think realistically he's done very well, like picking a guy up off the street and have him hit every field goal, I don't know if it's realistic, but if he makes the 45-yarder to go up 20-13, do they win the game?
Yes. I believe they do.
Okay.
And look, let me say this.
I got a couple more for you.
I know, but let me say this on the field goal. 45-yarder, he misses it. Ryan Succop has missed from that range,
too. Absolutely.
Adam
Vinatieri missed extra points.
I'm watching for a retirement announcement from Adam Vinatieri. So for fans, and I've seen it on Twitter, that are blaming Cairo Santos, listen, field goals in this league nowadays are tough. I mean, that's a part of it. You're not going to make every kick.
Well, the kickers are too good for their own good.
Right.
because it used to be in the 19, as late as the early 1990s. If you missed from 45 or 46 yards, you're like, okay, that's a 6 out of 10. Now it's like 45 and in, 47 and in, you're supposed to make it.
I remember the days when, with the Titans, Al Del Greco was the normal place kicker, but if it was beyond 45 or so, Hintrick came in and was the long-range kicker.
If Jacoby Brissett gets sacked in the second quarter touchdown drive, instead of escaping two different Titans in the backfield and running for the first down to keep the drive alive, do the Titans win the game?
In other words,
maybe it's worst case, it's 7-7 at the half and not 13-7?
That's when they went up 13-7.
You know the play I'm talking about. They got him dead to right in the backfield. He kind of bounces off, and then Vaccaro dives at his legs, misses.
Yeah.
He keeps the chains moving.
I think you can say yes because that they put 6 on the board. So, yeah.
If Tajay Sharp falls forward and gets a first down on the 3rd and 10 with 4:28 to go,
yes.
Do the Titans win the game?
Yeah. That was a bad play. That you got to know as a receiver. You got to know to fall forward. You got to know where the line to gain is.
All right, and how about, here's one more. If A.J. Brown snares that catch on the 4th and 2 and takes a, falls down at the, you know, and they have a chance to kick a 50, 52, 54-yarder, depending on how many yards he grabs after he catches it, do they win the game?
I'm not going to say yes or no to that because if it's a, because they would have had about 11 seconds if he gets out of bounds or – if they get up now, if he gets out of bounds, then you have a shot. You have another shot at it.
Well, he's not getting out of bounds. He's coming. He's slanting towards the middle of the field.
So you probably have 3 seconds if you're lucky on the clock.
Yeah, you got to run up and spike it
to get up and spike it
from wherever he falls down.
And then you're looking at over 50. So you can't definitively say,
but
yes
it's possible,
no.
Right?
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm throwing out at you is all of these things that I threw out there are separate from the Mariota problems that could have made it a lot easier, right? We could go into a list of things that Mariota could have done way, way better, right?
Yeah.
And have another. Would they win the game? Like just the 2 3rd and 5s,
yeah,
right, where he took sacks instead of missing a guy. But that's what's so frustrating about this loss, and the standards are much higher than they were. So it would have been one thing 3 years ago to have this happen, but now that it's happened, it stings a lot more. But what I'm trying to illustrate is there are a lot of other ways to win yesterday.
Yeah.
Let alone trying to beat the Patriots in a playoff game or trying to beat the Chiefs in the playoff game. Right? That's a whole nother question. But just to beat the Colts, there were so many things that they could have done beyond Mariota that they didn't do. That's why it was so head scratching. I think.
And
You're plus 2 in the turnovers.
Yeah, and you illustrated right there that of what we have been saying since we came on the air. It's not just one person. It was a total team loss.
Right.
And the Colts did not beat them. The Titans beat themselves.
Right. The Colts played the smart road game. We're not going to do anything stupid. We're going to see if you can beat us.
And
that's what was frustrating. Mario, a good tier 1, tier 2 quarterback, he erases all those little mistakes that we're talking about. He overcomes that and makes it something that you don't even discuss. But when you have a tier 3 quarterback, which is how Mariota played at best yesterday, that's when all of these little things, you got to be perfect. Not perfect, but you got to have way better attention to detail in a game like that if you want to be better than 9-7.
I'll tell you the play, too. Frank Reich, I mean, he had guts. He had guts for the whole fourth down going for it.
I forgot about that one. If they just make a stop there,
that was a
gutsy
move.
The Titans win the game if they stop them right there, right?
Yep, because they're definitely in field goal range. And
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know if I've never seen a guy run up to the line, do all the gyrations and the motion, try to draw them offside, which was the smart thing, then have everybody relax, and then you go for it. I thought that was a great psychological move right there, but still at that yard line, 34-yard line, where you're instantly in field goal range if you turn the ball over there.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say, my defense can hold them from the 50.
It was a gutsy play.
Wow, that was gutsy.
Yeah, yes, Pete. That is correct.
That was something. Pete is a huge fan of Frank Reich going back to the Buffalo days, no doubt about it. So
I like him as a play caller and a head coach. I mean,
Yes. Well, I That's why I knew it was going to be a close game. It's exactly the way I thought the game would go, and the Titans had the game in their grasp and just couldn't quite get over the hump. Now, the important thing is put it behind you. You got to turn right around and play against a Jacksonville team that's got big problems. Were you a little surprised Jacksonville was as close as they were in Houston? Given their situation?
A little, yeah. I didn't know what to expect with Gardner Minshew. Houston wins 13-12. So I think the AFC South is showing that it's a lot closer together than and I thought it would be with Andrew Luck retiring, that it was going to be close, but all these teams are right there together right now. Even Jacksonville sitting at 0-2.
All right, Jacksonville's 0-2. They're going to be desperate. Yeah. What is the line? I just looked. What is the line of the Titans-Jacksonville game? Now, this is one where y'all are saying. Now, you guys were saying they should beat the Colts. I was arguing with you guys all week about that.
You're right.
I think we're all sitting there going, you got to go down and beat Jacksonville. They don't have their quarterback. You got to. What's the line?
I'm going to say Jags by one.
You're close. It's a pick dead pick'em in the paper pick today. Dead pick'em. I don't know if that's a shoulda win, but that's one. You don't like being 1-2. You got to win that game. I'm more with you guys on this one.
Yeah.
Got to win this.
It's a must win.
But it won't be easy. All right, when we come back, we'll set the table for what's going on this afternoon. We've got the pregame starting at 3 officially, but we've got Mike Vrabel's press conference at 1:30. So at 1 o'clock, we'll set the table for the two lineups. We'll go over who's in each lineup today, the 3:30 game and the 7 o'clock game for the Predators. And we will continue for Pete and Terry's Tavern here on 102.5 The Game.